Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
7 of our 11 western states experiencing D3 or D4 on the U.S. Drought Monitor.
Brad Rippey, USDA meteorologist.
That coverage is led by Wyoming at 22% drought coverage of D3 or D4, followed by Arizona at 21%. Also in double digits at the end of January, we have Nevada coming in at 11% with extreme or exceptional drought. And California, on the strength of that significant drought in the southern part of the state, 12% of California experiencing extreme drought at the end of January. Some of that D3 and D4 extends onto the plains. Texas, 16% coverage of extreme or exceptional drought, along with 8% in Nebraska and 4-5% in the Dakotas. We still have extreme drought coverage, D3 in 34% of New Jersey and 9% of Delaware.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think our farmers, our ranchers, and our fishermen are treated with disrespect.
Always the fish. Always the fish.
Always. You have to include them. You know, how often do we eat seafood? Come on. They are treated with disrespect around the world. They are.
Reacting to Washington State Senator Maria Cantwell, Howard Lutnick is the nominee for Secretary of Commerce.
Our farmers, our ranchers, and our fishermen are treated with disrespect. The countries take advantage of American kindness, American gratitude that we used to rebuild the world after the world wars and after the Korean War and after the Vietnam War. We need that disrespect to end. And I think tariffs are a way to create reciprocity, to be treated fairly, to be treated appropriately. And I think it will help our farmers, our ranchers, and our fishermen to flourish. And that's what I expect this administration is going to drive. And that's why I'm honored to serve President Trump in his pursuit of that reciprocity and that fairness and the end of the disrespect. These countries have the reliance on the American economy. And they need to start to respect us and respect us now.
Also answering questions from the Senate Commerce Committee and Amy Klobuchar, the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee.
The members of the Commerce Department are extraordinary. We have extraordinary scientists, extraordinary people with deep intellect and deep knowledge. And my job is going to be to leverage them, to make them feel heard. And we were going to be responsive. And we will create a great Department of Commerce that the people feel respected, heard, and their knowledge used to the betterment of America, which is why they're there. And they're going to know that I support them.
Thank you. We talked about tariffs briefly, targeted or across the board. I gave you my preference toward targeted tariffs for economy. Weigh in on that.
I prefer across the board. I think when you pick one product in Mexico, they'll pick one product. You know, we pick avocados, they pick white corn, we pick tomatoes, they pick yellow corn. All you're doing is picking on farmers, which is just not going to happen. My way of thinking, and I discussed this with the president, is country by country, macro. Let America make it more fair. We are treated horribly by the global trading environment. They all have higher tariffs, non-tariff trade barriers and subsidies. They treat us poorly. We need to be treated better. We need to be treated with respect. And we can use tariffs to create reciprocity, fairness, and respect.
I'm sure we'll be discussing this more. Last thing, just the broadband funding in the bipartisan infrastructure law. All of us on this committee has worked on things like improving mapping. Senator Wicker and I worked on that. You're welcome. The work that must be done on getting broadband to some of the farthest corners of our country. We have an investment, once-in-a-generation investment, out of the bipartisan infrastructure law. And again, the freeze would have affected this work temporarily on hold. Talk about your support for broadband.
Well, you passed the bill, and they haven't put out any of the money, or nobody's gotten broadband. So it's time for a new Commerce Secretary to get broadband out to people and give you the benefit of the bargain. I want to give the Congress the benefit of the bargain, which is you appropriated money for broadband. Let's get it in their hands, and let's do it. The pause just gives me time to, A, be confirmed, and B, to study it, get the team working on it, and then when that pause ends, to get it out the door and get it done.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I, in the last West Wing, I believe I'm speaking correctly, was the only person with an agriculture background.
At her recent nomination hearing for Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins.
And that wasn't widely known because I was managing the entire portfolio. And but any time in any senior staff meetings or any time we were in the Oval Office and these issues would come up, he would always point to me and say, where are we on that? And it was so clear to me that that is where his heart is. I'll never forget a cabinet meeting where we were having a discussion about some big corporate entity who had asked for a very large sum in the multis of billions of dollars for a project. And that same week he had been asked for that project, he'd also visited some farmers in Georgia. And I'll never forget, I was sitting behind him because I was not part of the cabinet. I was part of the senior staff. And I'll never forget, I don't think the media was in there, but he looked at the entire cabinet and then turned, you know, over his shoulder and looked at us who were sitting behind him as his senior team. And he said, I'm not here for those guys who are asking for billions of dollars for their new project and their market value is many, many billions and billions more. I'm here for those farmers. I am here for those men and women that I met in Georgia yesterday who are hurting, but never complain, never miss a beat, never stop doing what they're called to do, which is to produce for the families across America and across the world. That is who I am here, and we all, pointing to the cabinet and the staff, are here to serve. I think that was in maybe year two of the four, and I've never forgotten it. And when he called me about this job, we talked about that again.
She was also asked by Kansas Senator Roger Marshall about biofuels and 45Z.
I think that everyone knows where the president is on this, and he often jokes that there were a lot of meetings. I think a lot of you were in, Senator Grassley, I know you were in many of those in the last White House, making sure that the president fully understood the importance of exactly what you're talking about, Senator, on biofuels and especially to our farmers. I believe that in the last 48 hours, one of his executive orders on energy actually included a mention of biofuels. And also, my role, if confirmed, is to defend all of American agriculture. So I believe, Senator, that you and others who hail from these states where this is a driver for your farmers and your ranchers and your economy should feel very confident that you have a friend and a defender in this current administration to make sure this continues. 45Z, obviously, my friend Scott Bessent, if confirmed over at Treasury, will be working on that. That's in his purview. But I will ensure that he has the data and the voices and the opinions around him to make the right decision.
Yeah, just one more quick call on the 45Z is that certainly what we don't want is China to benefit from it,
correct,
which is happening right now. We can go into that in more detail later as well. Let's finish up on the regulatory environment. Boy, I'm not sure if anything's a bigger concern to the American farmer right now than the regulatory environment. And the two hot-button issues have been WOTUS, Waters of the U.S., and the Endangered Species Act. Can you tell us what your involvement was in rolling back that WOTUS regulation with the previous administration? And that, I think, is a good example going forward of what will be happening.
I will, and I appreciate that so much because I do have extensive experience in many of these regulatory programs that in the last administration we worked to make roll back, but also align better for the needs of our ag communities and ensure that the Waters of the United States rule did not put more farmers out of business. Same with the Endangered Species Act. I know that that's also a big issue in our forestry lane as well. So I really encourage and look forward, and my policy heart is very happy at the opportunity to make those better, to understand the harm and follow the data on it and really work with all of you to try to solve for that in the next 4 years.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I grew up on Long Island, New York. My mother was an artist, as you said, and an art teacher. My father was a professor of American history.
So who is the nominee for Secretary of Commerce? Howard Lutnick, testifying before the Senate Commerce Committee.
My mother, Jane, taught me how to appreciate life. When I was 14, she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. But she decided if she was going to die before then, she was going to live. I'll never forget the day she pulled me out of class. So I rushed to the car and said, are you okay? And she said, I'm okay, let's go. We drove to New York City. We went to art galleries. Then we went to the opera. We went to a late night dinner, got home super late. And of course, she expected me to get up and get to school on time the next day. My mother died in February 1978 when I was 16 years old. A year and a half later, my father was diagnosed with lung cancer. He kept his diagnosis secret from me, because he wanted to make sure I left to start college in the fall. He dropped me off at school, and a week later, he went for his first chemotherapy treatment at a local hospital. The nurse accidentally gave him the wrong dose, and he died right then and there. It was September 12th, 1979, and I was 18 years old. So we all know losing one parent is heartbreaking, but losing both is something entirely different. It's life-shattering. Without any support from our extended family, Edie and I put my 15-year-old brother in a boarding school right near my college, and he would sleep with me in my dorm room on the weekends. The next year, Gary moved up to live with my sister and spent the next 2 years living with her while she earned her law and business degree. The three of us became inseparable. But as you can imagine, the pain we suffered when Gary and 657 of my other friends and colleagues at Cantor Fitzgerald were killed on 9/11. The company was located on the top five floors of the World Trade Center. I still can't say without being emotional, sorry. But no one in the office survived. I was taking my son Kyle to his first day of kindergarten, which is why I'm with you today. The company was destroyed, but on September 12th, I hosted a call with my surviving employees, and I laid out two choices for them. We could either attend our friends' funerals, but that's 20 funerals a day for 33 straight days, or we could try to rebuild the company to take care of the 658 families that we lost that day. So this phone call led to one of the most extraordinary events in American business history. All of our employees, both new and those that survived, agreed to donate 25% of their salaries to the families of 9/11 colleagues. So together we raised $180 million over the next 5 years for those families. And my employees, they stitched my soul back together. My employees never expected to get paid back, but I had other ideas. So in 2008, we took a division of our company public, and I gave each and every one of those employees double of what they had given to those families. I've worked at Cantor my entire career, 41 years, and rebuilding the company over the past 24 years is my greatest business achievement. After 9/11, we were down to about 1,000 employees. Today, the company employs more than 14,000. I'm so proud of my exceptional friends at Cantor, BGC, and Newmark. I saw the strength of the American spirit during President Trump's campaign, and it fueled my desire to serve our nation. We need healthy businesses, small, medium, and large, to hire our great American workers to drive our economy. I will dedicate myself to making our government more responsive, working to ensure Americans have the greatest opportunity for success. I am an outcome-driven leader, and upon my confirmation, I will take a thoughtful and rigorous approach to leading this great department and serving our country.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
If we look back at 2024 and we're talking about the Mexican animal coming across the border, we were on track to have record large Mexican cattle crossing into the U.S. before the New World screwworm closed the border in November.
Brady Miller is Director of Markets, Membership, and Education with Texas Cattle Feeders.
That curtailed that amount of animals that were coming across. So we did not meet that record amount. But typically, on average, we probably feed somewhere in the U.S. somewhere between 1 million to 1.2 million Mexican animals on feed. We have been as low as about 850,000. Back in 2014, I think it was, we were at 1.45 million, and we were on track to hit the 1.5 million head of Mexican animals crossing the border, which, again, was going to benefit us. As in making sure that because we lost a million head of cows during the drought of 22-23, kind of like the beef on dairy, it was going to fill that gap and help us get through the time of having fewer native animals. But with the border closing in November, December, I think it has made a huge effect on the markets of where we're at today. Were we in the 190s, 192, 193, 194 range? Were we bumping up, you know, the $2 range? Yes, we were. But I think whenever that border closed and we had fewer of those animals coming across, I think that was one of the nails in the coffin. And I shouldn't say nails in the coffin, but that was one of the effects that shot this market higher. And that's what we're seeing today, and we'll continue to see that. Now, you made the comment that the rumor is that the border is going to open sometime soon. We've been hearing that for the last 3 weeks, I think, or last month. is that, okay, the borders are going to open in a week, borders going to open in a week. And we have yet to see that. We're getting closer every day in getting that done. The pens in Mexico that where they have to be, cattle have to be held and inspected before they come across. Many of those have passed their test as far as meeting the requirements when it comes to the New World screw worm. But today we're waiting on some paperwork to be signed and filed. So when we're talking about the Mexican government and the U.S. government, I mean, that's kind of what's holding this thing up, and that's what we're waiting on.
And what is the effect of this closed border?
The longer the border stays closed on the south, it just means fewer animals are coming across. And we have not yet started a rebuilding phase after the last drought of 22-23. We're still waiting to see us to bottom out and rebuild this thing and start in the rebuilding phase. And what I can say here and tell you, based off what we learned in the last drought of 11 and 12, which acted differently. I mean, that was a super fast down and it was a super fast up. They call it a V bottom. This one is more of what they call a saucer bottom because it's been prolonged. And I think one of the reasons why this has been prolonged, looking at what we're looking at today and looking forward, is because of the high prices that these animals are bringing. So one of the things that we watch and we look at very heavily to tell us if we're in a rebuilding phase or not is how many heifers do we have on feed. And so from the time that we start seeing the heifers on feed dropped significantly, what I can tell you is it takes about, well, what it took last time was about 18 months to 2 years before we actually bottomed out and we saw the high prices before we started going the other direction back in 15-16.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm concerned about the high cost of vehicles. Many families can't afford them now.
Senate Commerce Committee and Michigan Senator Gary Peters.
And if tariffs are put in place that deal with that seamless trade that goes on with Canada, that in the short run could definitely have an impact on prices and make cars even more unaffordable. I don't think that's something the American people want to see, and I'm afraid it would hurt consumers as well as also hurt those workers.
Peters questioning Howard Lutnick, who is the nominee for Secretary of Commerce on tariffs.
Talk me through how those tariffs would be implemented, what you're thinking will happen there, and how it's going to have an impact on prices, particularly in the short term. I know where you're going to go on the long term, but all this stuff takes time. And especially when it comes to manufacturing, it's not an industry that can turn on a dime. It's much more complicated, as I know you know.
So the big tariff view is going to be studied, and the president launched that in an executive order where he asked the Commerce Department and the USTR to study the tariff model long term. The short term issue is illegal migration and, worse even still, fentanyl coming into this country and killing over 100,000 Americans. There's no war we could have that would kill 100,000 Americans. The president is focused on ending fentanyl coming into the country. You know that the labs in Canada are run by Mexican cartels. So this tariff model is simply to shut their borders with respect. Respect America. If we are your biggest trading partner, show us the respect. Shut your border and end fentanyl coming into this country. So it is not a tariff per se. It is an action of domestic policy. Shut your border and stop allowing fentanyl into our country, killing our people. So this is a separate tariff to create action from Mexico and action from Canada. And as far as I know, they are acting swiftly. And if they execute it, there will be no tariff. And if they don't, then there will be. But it's an action-oriented model. That's not the ordinary tariff. The ordinary tariffs need to be studied and examined, and that will start, as the EO said, in April.
So that's a separate tariff.
Correct.
After that study, what would be the timeline of that?
I think that's sort of in April. Those studies will come out in the end of March and April, and then you'll hear about those at that time. So big macro issues with tariff are being studied, but the micro issue is Canada and Mexico and the precursors from China They need to end, and we need to protect our Americans from fentanyl and our trading partners in Canada and Mexico. They should end it and stop disrespecting us and allowing this come through our borders.
Well, I think we all agree on secure borders. I'm with you all the way. Being a northern border state, the ranking member on Homeland Security, we want to do that. My concern, though, is what's going to happen in the April timeframe as to what could that mean in terms of increased costs to Americans. If not properly implemented or properly fought through, what sort of assurances can you give us that we will not see that when that second set of tariffs get implemented, or if they get implemented, but it sounds as if that's your plan?
Well, we are going to study the actions and the economy of America and how it works. But if you think about it, we need to grow domestic manufacturing. As you said, Michigan is one of the great places where we build things. And the car manufacturing went to Canada, it went to Mexico. It is important that that come back to Michigan and come back to Ohio and come back to the great states of America that can build. And so I think a thoughtful tariff policy that drives domestic manufacturing, I think, is fundamental to the American workers, especially to the workers in Michigan.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Should you be an advocate? Should you post on social media? Should you do this? How do you decide? I'm not one that I'm going to tell you that you have to.
Dan Ventiker is an Iowa dairy farmer, known online in social media circles as Iowa Dairy Farmer.
Because it's not for everybody. And how do you decide to do it? You need to ask, where's your home? And what I mean by that is, like, when you have just a moment of free time, you have just any moment of free time, any moment of not distraction, kids are asleep, whatever, where's your brain go? If the first place your brain goes is your phone because you have free time, your phone is your home. But here's the deeper part of that. Every app wants to be your home.
Remember, people don't like to feel stupid.
I go out of my way to make sure people don't feel stupid for asking a question, because even like us as adults on the internet, people make us feel stupid for asking questions when, I don't know why you have a 3-point planner, but now I feel stupid for asking. And we don't want to make people feel that way. So our timeline for how we did everything we did on social media, I get asked a lot about how we did what we did, when we got started. So we've gained a lot of followers in a short amount of time. So March of 2021, we started on TikTok, and the words are kind of small, but it took about 2 weeks to find the angry vegans. There is a lot of them on the app, and there still is, but it was my wife who kind of pushed me to get started in March to putting videos on TikTok. Megan McAllister, she's very active in the Iowa Farm Bureau. She had started on TikTok in like September of 2020. So I saw she was doing it. She had a lot of videos that were getting a lot of views. So I thought, well, if Megan can do it, I'm going to give it a whirl. So we did. By that summer, we had 300,000 to 400,000 followers. People liked seeing the robots. People liked seeing the vegan rebuttal videos. We're like, you know, we have a vegan activist who's saying this, but like, here's what the truth actually is. And people just, I think, enjoyed seeing somebody stand up for the dairy industry. But it was in July of 2021, we actually joined Facebook. So I was always kind of anti-Facebook. I always kind of thought it was like for old people to look at their grandkids, or like just wasn't a place for it. But we got on Facebook as a backup because I was one more video away from getting banned on TikTok. So if I put up a video of like a newborn calf and there was some placenta on it, it would get flagged for violent content or graphic content. If I did a vegan rebuttal video, that would get flagged for bullying. So we were kind of getting limited on how much we could do on TikTok just because of that. So Facebook was a backup, and it kind of felt like we were starting over because we had no presence there whatsoever. 22 to 23, much to my surprise, Facebook actually outpaced TikTok. So TikTok, at that time, we were still doing all the same videos. I just put all those videos on Facebook, but then Facebook actually grew past TikTok in followers, engagement, reach, interactions, shares. Everything about it was better. And what surprised me was my most popular demographic on Facebook, probably 70%, is between the ages of like 25 and 45. And so we realized a lot of that is millennials and the millennial mom buying groceries, buying food for their kids, and they want to know where their milk is coming from. Our lowest percentage is probably over 60 and under 18. And I think under 18 is where TikTok comes in. It still has a role to play. But 2023, we focused more on Facebook. It's where the interactions were. It's where the engagement was. And we took the second half of the year off of TikTok. And I'll talk about why here towards the end. I took the second half of the year off of posting, but not consuming. And that's an important distinction. People ask, how? How did we gain so many followers? And my short answer is, I don't know. I don't have a good answer. But I do have a funny story. So there was a guy at a keynote I was giving last February. He works for a financial institution, and their institution essentially held a corporate retreat. They brought experts in from Silicon Valley, from Meta, and from TikTok. And they were teaching this financial institution how to grow a following. And they had examples of all these followers. Like, here, I don't remember some of the big names, but it was like, here's what they did. They posted 5 times a day. They used 2 hashtags. They post before 10 a.m. They do this. They do that. And here, they grew a following. And then here's a guy who grew a massive following, and we have no idea how he did it. And it was me. So I don't know how we did it, and Meta and TikTok don't know how we did it.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We've actually seen slightly improving conditions across parts of the northern plains.
Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
We also saw a number of snowstorms and winter weather events across parts of the south, and that led to some overall improvement in the drought situation. When the precipitation falls in that form, it's very effective at entering the soils because you get that slow melting or percolation into the soils. That said, we did see several areas that saw worsening conditions during the month of January. Precipitation was a little disappointing in much of the mid-Atlantic states, so we continue to hang on to drought there that developed last autumn. We see rapidly worsening conditions in much of the nation's southwestern quadrant, stretching from Southern California into the Four Corners region. We continue to see, despite some light rain and snow in the last week or so, very, very dry conditions overall and limited topsoil moisture in much of Southern California and the Southwest.